You are listening to CKLN. This is Saturday Morning Live. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, or Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond. We are broadcasting from www.ckln.fm or just ckln.fm. And we have an exciting show for you today. We are going to be playing, we're going to be speaking with Melinda Francis at 10:30. We're going to be speaking about the Hot Docs documentary series. We're also going to be, we're going to have Amanla come in at 11 o'clock, the Gorilla Crew. Gerald Horn will be in, as usual, at 11:30. And at 12 p.m., we're going to be speaking to Liz Raleigh of the Communist Party, and we're going to be speaking about the May 2nd federal elections. And this is Saturday Morning Live, And we're going to present an interview with Harry Jerome. His film, The Mighty Jerome. Mighty Jerome is in the Hot Docs Film Festival, and I'm certain that when Melinda comes on, she will be talking about the film. And this is the voice of Harry Jerome.
Well, that's the Estadio Olimpico after the Bill Good half hour from the pool. And with me, Harry Jerome, our ranking international sprinter from Canada. And Harry, is there sort of a relief that it's all over?
Yes, it is. It's really nice to come out here and just sit down and relax and watch other people compete.
Well, Harry, three Olympics. Was this one rather of a disappointment for you, despite a splendid effort?
No, not really. I was hoping to get in the finals of the 100 meters, and if I got in there and if things worked out, you know, very well, then I knew I could come up maybe with a medal or maybe a little higher in the placing. But knowing sprinting, and it's just one of those type of situations that you hope things will go well. In this case, I ran 10-1, and that wasn't good enough.
Well, Harry, going back over three Olympics, Rome, Tokyo, Mexico City, is there any comparisons that you can draw?
Well, for my individual competition, I mean, the 100 meters has improved so greatly in terms of quantity and quality. In 1960, you could come up here and run 10-4, 10-5, and make it easily through the first round. Now, right off, you're running 10-1, 10-flat.
What's the reason behind that, Harry? Is it the equipment, or is it the training routines, or the technique?
I think it's the technique. Of course, the track here is just marvelous, and I think the competition is, well, keen, and I think you're just getting bigger and stronger people all over the world.
This seems that you mentioned competition, Harry. Are we getting enough? Are Canadian athletes getting enough of this type of competition to be able to come to an international meet of this nature, this stature, the best in the world, and expect to do well?
No, honestly, we need to have a lot more opportunities to get out and compete against the other nations in the world. Maybe like the brothers have this year, go over as an Olympic team or as part of the team that will come to the meet and compete. And I know, for instance, the African nations are looking for competition. It would be nice maybe in one or two years before the 72 games to take a tour to Africa.
Harry, do you think we need more of an effort along the line of just pure equipment, putting the right equipment in the hands of the young people?
Right, this is true. I mean, you're probably quite aware, looking at the games yourself, that we don't have any pole vaulters, we don't have any triple jumpers, we're very weak in the javelin, and this is our problem. We just aren't getting the kids to use these implements at an early age, so we're not getting the development.
Teams are also missing in one of the basics and just running here, the 4x100 meter relay team, and we don't have one in here today. Harry Jerome is sitting up here in the stands with me.
Yes, and I feel kind of upset about this. I think we could have had a relay team that could have went out and ran 39.5. I mean, the Germans have a team that ran this morning about 39.4, and I'm sure that we can go out there and compete with them. Of course, the Americans and the Jamaicans are very tough.
Well, the Americans this morning seem to be in a little trouble. I saw Charlie Green out there, both thighs heavily taped, and they ran second to the Cubans. And, of course, this brings up the John Carlos-Tommy Smith affair. They're missing over that incident here. And Harry, is a ranking Canadian international athlete, what was your reaction to the incident and the subsequent action taken by the American people?
Well, I think the real problem could have been looked after before they came to the Olympic Games. And then they came here, and the newspaper people and different other individuals were looking for some trouble, and I think they really pushed Carlos and Smith into doing something. And I think it was something sad, I think, not only from maybe their point of view, but particularly for the other athletes that are competing in those events. I mean, for them, the athletes from other countries competing in that, this was probably their highlight of their track career or their life, and this has taken something away from them.
Do you feel that this action by the American officials was particularly harsh, Harry? Was this a general reaction in the Olympic Village?
Yes, I think there's a lot of sympathy for these two individuals.
Harry, it's confirmed you're hanging up your tack, so to speak, as they say in racing circles, other racing circles.
Yes, I'm going to go home, and I hope to get involved in the sport in some other way other than as an athlete.
Well, now, is it going to become a problem for Harry Jerome, you know, after three Olympics over a period of time, that's 12 years here, that you've been an international star, building up to an international star, you've been controversial, there's been the trips, the excitement, the stimulation of being a competitor. Now, how's Harry Jerome going to compensate for this?
Well, this is going to be a problem, but right now I kind of look forward to just sitting down or lying down and doing nothing, but I'm going to obviously probably have some type of problem like this, but I hope I can, you know, fulfill this sort of need in terms of getting into the organization and some other aspects. Plus, I would like to get out and play in a few other sports. I like tennis, handball, squash, and we even fool around on Sunday mornings over at the Forum, and ice hockey.
And you are listening to CKLN. That was the voice of Harry Jerome, who represented Canada in three Olympics, 1960, 1964, 1968. And he won a gold medal in the Commonwealth Games in Jamaica in 1966. And he held the world record for the 100 meters and the 100-yard dash. And we're going to continue with the music of Randy Weston. We'll be right back. And you are listening to CKLN, CKLN.FM. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, and in the studio with me is Melinda Francis. And we're going to take one more musical break and come back and talk about the Hot Docs Film Festival. Bobo.
Away captivity and require from us a song.
All right, okay. And By the Rivers of Babylon by Don Moyer, who is in Chicago. I don't know what Don Moyer is. He was living in Chicago because he was with the Art Ensemble of Chicago. But he is originally from Rochester, New York. And this is Saturday Morning Live. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali. And I am in the studio with Melissa Francis.
Melinda.
What I said, Melissa?
Yeah.
Again?
Yeah.
Melinda. Melinda, the song that Bobby Taylor sang a song called Melinda.
Yep.
And how do you pronounce the name of your company?
A DocuVixen film.
DocuVixen.
Mm-hmm.
DocuVixen Films.
Vixen. Yes.
Okay. And it's Melinda.
Yes.
Not Melissa. Boy, I keep on messing that up. You've been going to the Hot Docs Film Festival, and I wanted to get your thoughts on some of the film. First of all, what is a Hot Doc Film Festival, and what is your relationship to the Hot Docs Film Festival?
I've been involved in Hot Docs since I finished school about 10 years ago. So I'm a documentary filmmaker, so I watch a lot of films, and when I came out of school, I basically wanted to get involved with Hot Docs. So I volunteered for 3 years. And from there, I started to work during the festival for about 4 years, and I worked in the doc shop. And those who wouldn't know this, but it's like the industry part of the festival. So along with films for 10 days, there's also industry things that go on where filmmakers, producers, broadcasters, buyers, content buyers come and they either sell films or buy films. So I would work in the doc shop, which is a marketplace for documentary films, and it's like a library. So along with the festival, there's also a library that's hosted during the festival, and not only the selected films, but all the submissions are housed in this doc shop where buyers come to screen the films, and media writers and all that kind of stuff. So I basically did that for 4 years, and this year is the first year where I'm just a delegate, and I'm basically gaining support for the Haiti project.
Now, you saw a couple of films, and I guess we can start by which would start wherever you want to start.
Okay. Well, I was figuring we'll just start from the beginning. Opening night. Opening night started on Thursday night, and the opening film was called Palm Wonderful Presents the Greatest Movie Ever Sold. And it was directed by Morgan Spurlock. And those who you might know him from the movie Supersize Me, which was another doc blockbuster, and it was around him eating McDonald's. And by the end of the film, he almost goes through liver failure. And it actually had effect on the menu of McDonald's. So it did have an effect. But throughout the movie, he eats McDonald's for lunch, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Do you have a Big Mac or Whopper or what?
He goes through the whole menu. So anyway, this film is an inside look at product placement and the relationship with branding and Hollywood and co-promotion, which is where a film brand like partners with a brand, and they use cross promotion in driving ticket sales. And for a blockbuster to happen, the industry set up where you have to basically join up with a brand to bring up ticket sales, kind of thing. So the films, is an inside look into that industry. And Morgan, he pitches all these corporations or brands to sponsor his film. And that's the whole basically process. So you kind of get an inside look of how that process works. And he basically, he gains like, you know, 12 brands or whatever. And by the end, he actually gets all these brands to sponsor his film. So, yeah.
In terms of, you say that he seemed like he was quite disgusted. Was he genuinely disgusted, or was that, you think
well
he was acting?
I think throughout the movie, like, every artist kind of goes through this, how do you fund certain things? And so throughout it's like a set satirical look at the whole industry and product placement and everything. But throughout the process, he actually goes through the process of buying in. So, so the question is, like, what's the line for, you know, what's the line when you sell out? Like, what's the line? When do you draw the line? It works for this movie because it is an inside look at the actual advertising industry and all that kind of stuff. But I'm throughout, like, it's really funny, and he's a character. But there's like a line in the film where I start to feel kind of, oh my gosh, like,
need to take a shower.
I kind of feel dirty, you know. And especially there's a scene where they go to a school board which is using different companies to fund certain programs. So he kind of approaches them to actually help with like promotion as well. So it's just like, yeah, at that point you're just like, oh, this is where everything's going, like everything's for sale kind of thing. So that's what I left with the film, and you kind of feel like, oh.
And you're listening to Saturday Morning Live. This is www.cklin.fm. Melinda Francis is in the studio, and Jean JP is on the buttons. And opening night, how many films have you seen so far? Opening night was the first film that you saw.
I've seen 4 films. My goal is to watch at least 3 films.
Well, let's talk about the other two, and then save the Black Power.
Okay.
Mix. What's the correct name of that?
Black Power Mixtapes.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the two other films you saw, and then let's spend some time on the Black Power Mixtapes.
Okay. So the next day, I wasn't able. I'm trying to see as many films as I can. So I am actually using the Doc Shop, and since I know people there, and I went there, and industry is able to do that when you get a pass. So I went and watched the Mighty Jerome film in the Doc Shop. But it also played at 9:30, and I don't know if
it
people want to know.
It played at 9:30 this morning?
No, 9:30 yesterday, and it's playing. Yeah, it played. It's playing at 11 actually today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think next week, weekend or something.
It's going to play next. It's going to play at the Review next Sunday.
Next Sunday.
Next Sunday. Right. Right. Right.
So Mighty Jerome is a biography on Harry Jerome, who was an athlete in the 60s. He's a track star, Canadian track star, in the 50s and 60s. And it's a biography of his life, which it was really well done. And I actually know Charles, so I knew when he was actually in production with this film. So Yeah, it was really interesting. And what was interesting to me is his experience in university. It reminded me of my father's experience in Toronto at U of T in the 60s. So kind of really reminded me of that experience. And that experience hasn't really been told. So that I like that aspect of the film,
mm-hmm.
Black experience within 50s and 60s. And in Canada specifically. And I don't know, I kind of, yeah, like I just think it's really amazing being Black in Vancouver. Because my experience when going to Vancouver was, you know, people would say, you know, there's no Black people over there. Like, I was like, no, that's not true. That can't be true. But in some places, it's kind of sparse, you know. So so I thought, yeah, I really kind of related his story to my father's story, I guess.
But in terms of him, he went to a school, there were three Black people in the whole school, him, his sister, and a guy from Toronto who was, I know people that know him, and they say he was on his way to being a serious delinquent.
Oh, and he was sent out.
He was sent to Boston, and that didn't work out. Then they sent him to Vancouver, and well, today he's a lawyer, but I mean, so it did work out. But Paul Wynn, I think is his name, he was really, they say he was really on his way to pretty bad things, because he was supposed to have been a pretty rough character when he was in Toronto.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, if people don't know about Harry Jerome, it's a very important film to go see. So I would go see it.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah. Last night, it was a late film. It was like 9:45, and it was called Grinders. It was directed by Matt Gallinger? Yeah, Gallinger. And it is basically about... the Toronto illegal poker scene in Toronto.
Poker, like as in cards?
Yes, in cards, like that scene. So he follows that underground scene, and he's actually a player within the film. And
the filmmaker is a poker player as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I think with that kind of access, you need to kind of
have some credibility. Right.
Yeah. Right. So. Yeah, it was an interesting film. It's it reminded me of my brother, because my brother plays poker, so that's why I wanted to go see it. It's interesting why I pick films, but yeah. And there's also like a short film that went with it, and it was called Chance Encounters. And it was actually a Humber student who did it, and it was really well done. And it documented this wife and husband who work for the TTC, and they're subway drivers, operators, and they both share the experience of having jumpers jump in front of the TTC, and it's about that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really well done as well. So, yeah.
And you're listening to CKLN. This is CKLN.FM. My name is Norman Otis Richmond. I'm in the studio with Melinda Francis. And you were talking about that poker situation. I remember Fred Hampton saying that he didn't play cards. He didn't play baseball. He didn't play football. And I remember getting into a lot of trouble when I was young, because I never played cards or checkers or chess. And I would always be run away from what older people would be. It's like, boy, get away from here. We went to work and we supporting you. So let us have some fun, you know. And I was always so serious about, you know, playing those games. But even when I go to the casinos now, I still don't play. When you go to those casinos, you see mostly African, South Asian, Filipinos go up, you know, to that. And I guess that's people trying to make some money by any means necessary. I would like
To add to that, it's like also following people who make a living off of poker. So
some
it's not
good.
Just
basically,
they're playing poker for income,
for a living, right?
So that's very interesting, and that's the grinders where people, this is their source of income, right? So
it's like somebody can play pool that goes around.
Right.
So. Like Minnesota Fats, Etta James claimed that he was her father, right? And you're listening to Saturday Morning Live, the Black Power mixtapes. What were your impressions of that film?
So the film is called The Black Power Mixtapes from 1967 to 1975. So it's a Swedish film, and it's found footage, and it was sitting in, you know, a Swedish basement. So can you imagine if you're a filmmaker and you find all this footage?
How did that, like, Danny?
Crazy.
Someone found it and got it to Danny Glover or someone else, and Danny Glover just co-signed it. He has something. Danny Glover, the actor.
He's, I think, an exec producer.
Okay. In the film industry, what is the executive producer?
They're like financiers.
Money.
Okay. Yes. So, or like they organize getting that, or the resources and stuff. So, his production company, I think, is an exec producer.
That's Toussaint Louverture Films or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like all found footage. So, and it's also like they interview a whole various of things. I guess I think they edited it and they kind of sent, you know, to different artists and Angela Davis, and they're talking about the impressions of the footage,
mm-hmm.
And it's totally like a remix, right? So thus, like the Black Power mixtapes. So as an editor, the editing just blew me away. It's just really, really powerful, and I didn't know that Sweden like was following the Black Power movement at that time. So. That was interesting, and it's kind of a document of a certain portion that, you know, is really important. So, yeah, I recommend it to everybody.
Well, Sweden was a country that supported. Trying to figure out what, I don't know if Sweden was at the Berlin Conference 1885. I know the. Russia was not there. A lot of the Eastern European countries were not there. I don't know if Sweden was there, but Sweden, a lot of liberation movements, you know, South Africa, Angola, they all had bases in Sweden for support, as well as the Panthers had a headquarters, I mean, had an exile there, mm-hmm. as well as the League of Revolutionary Black Workers. I remember seeing, there's a little small footage of the League's office in Detroit. In this film, they didn't. I don't know if anybody caught that. And also, I saw a scene in there where Bobby Seale was in Sweden, and he's standing next to a guy named Masai Hewitt, who was the minister of education of the Panthers, and he grew up in the same neighborhood that I grew up in. And to be honest with you, he helped me get out of the United States and come to Canada. But Masai was a the Minister of Education, he's what for whatever. I guess this is not gossip. He's also the father of Elaine Brown's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and Masai is in that particular film. But I thought the footage of Stokely Carmichael interviewing his mother, I thought that was worth the price of admission. Mabel Carmichael, who was born in Panama, I really like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very personal and intimate, and yeah. Yeah, I was blown away from it. So,
but that Angela Davis interview, I thought that was probably the most powerful piece in the
mm-hmm,
movie.
What
did you think about that?
Oh yeah, like Yeah, I mean, like, there's every scene I was just like blown away. So the Angela Davis was really powerful.
I've never seen her that angry before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was really interesting because she was kind of interrogating the filmmakers too, right? So like, you know, you don't know this, like she was laying it down. So it was good. Yeah,
but the thing about her is that unlike a lot of black people who were born in America, she at least had done, I think that was in, she had spent some time, I guess, in England. Yeah, she went to, she mm-hmm. was in England for a second. And there are many black people, especially in the United States of America, unlike the Caribbean, who never travel because, why would you travel? You're in America, you know, that's the best country in the world, mm-hmm. supposedly. I'm just mm-hmm. saying that in quotations. But Angela had traveled, so to see her go off like that was kind of and mm-hmm. the guy was really not, I really think the guy didn't know. I mean, he was asking an honest question.
Yeah.
And Angela just couldn't, it's like my father had to pick up guns and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And, you know, they lived, you know, bombs going off. Because, you know, they used to call Birmingham, where Angela was born, Birmingham, Alabama, mm-hmm. right? And she knew the four girls who were bombed at the church in 1963. I mean, she actually knew them,
right?
And Colin Powell's wife lived next door to Angela Davis, and she was at Angela Davis was at Colin Powell's wedding. I mean, you know, I've heard her talk about that, but it was That was quite something.
Right. Yeah. And she was that interview, she was in jail at that time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. And let me see. And what did you think about Elaine Brown when she was interviewed? The Panther. She was at that time, she was the head of the Black Panther Party.
Yeah. It's interesting how they selected, I guess it's all found footage, so it's whatever
they could find, right?
I think, you know, like, I mean, I was drawn more to, like, the Angela Davis interview, but, that was good as well. I mean, the whole thing is good. Go watch the film. Yeah. It was sort of like the film, it kind of had this naivety, like, you know, like sort of, it was very, the film, it was just like, it's sort of like, it was so, I guess the interviews, like the Swedish, the one thing that was interesting was like the whole scene where they're going through the ghettos.
Oh, you mean when they were on the bus?
Yeah.
Oh, that was kind of crazy. That was strange. That was almost like on a safari.
Yeah. disturbing.
These Negroes are, you know, they won't eat you, that type of, yeah.
I was that scene, I was just like, okay.
You know, like they have pots here and, you know.
Yeah. And that was in the later on in the film. Yeah. I think it was like in 74 or 75.
Now that was insane.
That scene was kind of, and I'm like, did that happen often? Like, did they come every year and do that? Like, was it a tourist thing? Like, yeah. So
let's go to Sylvia's and eat some hog maws and some chitlins. Like, yeah. Sylvia's is. That's the soul food restaurant. Yeah, Sylvia's in Harlem. And, yeah.
So that was just, yeah, that was interesting. So it had this sort of like, it sort of had this sort of innocence, but at the same time, it was sort of this exotification.
But don't you think that Talib Kweli sort of really put things in perspective?
Yeah, and those interviews, the modern day interviews, kind of grounded the film. Which was really like they had Erykah Badu, they had Talib Kweli, Angela Davis was in there. Like they interviewed a whole lot of their impressions of the footage, and I think that really grounded the film back into sort of present day.
Well, you know, it's very hard for me to criticize Malcolm X. And that's one of the things about Malcolm X that we used to always say, that what made him different from Elijah Muhammad was that he basically, Malcolm, said he was not perfect. And, you know, Elijah Muhammad was the messenger of Allah, so you couldn't criticize the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But Malcolm says, okay, I'm a man just like you. And Malcolm was talking in that film. He was really talking about, he was a very New York-centric. And Talib sort of called him on that. It's like, you know, in New York, we're this, we're that, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And you could really see that that was, you know, like New York. As much as I like New York, it's like, you know, there's Kinshasa, there's Kinshasa, you know, there's Kingston, there's Port of Spain, there's Bridgetown.
Yeah.
You know, like what makes New York?
Yeah. Center of the world.
Center of the world, yeah. I mean, it's strategically it's located and you have a mixture of people. I mean, there's, but I mean, Talib sort of said, you know, that Malcolm was known for, he could play to an audience.
Right, right,
Because, I mean, I've heard people say the same thing about L.A. or Oakland. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, every town has their has their sort of thinks that they are the center of the world.
Yeah.
Right, right. Because I remember Fela Kuti said he learned his black consciousness when he went to Los Angeles, and people, you know, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. James Brown recorded that in Los Angeles with a bunch of white kids saying, those are white kids saying, I'm black and I'm proud. There's no black kids in that. On that record, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, maybe I can. We could come back, and I could tell what I'm thinking of seeing, and then we could go on. Or
we only have a few seconds left,
okay,
but we can.
That's fine. That's fine.
Anything that's else?
It. I'm going to be going to films every day till the end, which is I think the last day is on the 9th.
9th of May.
May, yeah.
All right.
So go and see films. It's Hot Docs. It's holiday kind of right now.
All right. Thank you. And we're going to make room for the Gorilla Crew and Kelson. And we will be back with Melissa next week.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Melinda.
Yeah. I didn't want to correct you again, but.
No, you can correct me. I'm human. Thank you.
Send me some loving. Send it, I pray. How can I love when you fall away? Send me your picture. My days are so long.